Welcome to Season 4 of Whiteboard.fm. Today we're going to interview Debashish Paul, Principal Product Designer at Twitter. Debashish has previously worked at Adobe, Yahoo, SAP, Facebook, and has over 60 design patents registered under his name. You're going to learn about how he got these opportunities, what was his process, what all did he do to become such a great designer, and so much more. So without wasting any further time, let's get started. This is your host Ansh Mehra, and you are tuning into Season 4 of Whiteboard.fm. Welcome to Whiteboard FM, Debashish. We are super, super happy to host you. We have so many questions from you. And the day we saw your profile, we were like, this guy has worked at some of the most exciting and inspiring companies ever. And it's so, so, it's such an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Ansh.
All right, Debashish. So I'll begin from the first question. You've worked at some of the most popular and tough to get in companies from the very start. What did you do to get all these opportunities? How do you get in?
Well, yeah, I mean, we can say that in retrospect, but that was not the plan ever, right? I mean, I did not come into the industry or even like become a designer with a plan in my head. It just like kept happening. I would give a lot of credit to my first, company, I would say, like the big name company, which is Adobe. And that, I would say, was also a kind of a chance kind of a thing that happened with me back in like way back in 2006. I was too much, I think, into Flash and doing things with Flash. There used to be a software called Flash, if you remember, or if you've heard of it, and it's a totally new generation now. But yeah, I used to do a bunch of like fun stuff with Flash. And, you know, I had a very little blog, I would say, on blogspot.com. This is the, you know, a blogging platform from the past. And my blog got noticed, and you know, a hiring manager from Adobe got a recruiter to reach out to me, and they were setting up a new team in Bangalore. Macromedia had just got acquired by Adobe, and they were setting up this mobile team where Flash Lite was the mobile Flash player, and they were looking for someone who can write applications or even like conceptualize and design applications and use them to test the product or test the, you know, Flash code base itself. And it was a pretty new beginning for me in terms of just like understanding how this works. And mobile, I had never worked on. I was working on like, I think some e-learning tools before that in my like first like Tata Interactive, where I was working back in Calcutta. So yeah, I think that break kind of moved the needle into a world which was very new to me. And I just started exploring, and mobile was so new. And this I'm talking about 2006, which is before the iPhone, right? So no one knew that in a year or so, there'll be a new mobile device altogether, which will change the course of history. And back in India back then, it was very hard to find like, you know, mobile app or mobile design or development opportunities. So yeah, I started with that. Being able to design and develop all those applications gave me a lot of understanding, and I would say a lot of interest that it kind of generated in me about interaction design, and you know, how constraints are so important to kind of be creative. And also a lot of feedback and mentors around helped me understand what could be the path or the course of this career. So I kind of moved into design, and then Yahoo happened, and then yeah, Facebook happened. There was a transition from India to US as well in between. But I would say, yeah, it was more about just exploring and like just like wanting to do my best. And it just like kept opening up those doors, and those opportunities came rolling.
So you feel that getting that one good company at the beginning of your career is really important because it serves as a tipping point.
I would say it's not a playbook, of course, but even after getting inside a big organization, right, the struggle continues. The struggle continues to be visible. The struggle continues to do the work that you want to do because there's so much to do. I, as a person, I'm a sucker for like different perspectives and different experiences. A big company does give that opportunity where like, if you don't like a type of use case or a problem space, you can definitely like, you know, look into other parts of the same company where maybe there's a different problem space that you can be a part of. So that was actually one of the biggest reasons why I think after Adobe, everything that I did, Facebook, such a long time that I spent there, I actually moved around teams, moved around problem spaces, and that never made me feel bored at one thing, like, you know, doing one thing, keep on doing one thing. So I would say that is a function of a big company, but the first name did not definitely help the second one, and the second one did not definitely help the third one, I would say. So it was not connected. It was my decision. Like, I had options to join other companies during every break, but I chose to join a company that was big in size. So I was just like, the person inside me just wants to kind of just learn and do more stuff in different problem spaces, get more perspectives, and, like, you know, just keep going.
You said that you really enjoy seeing things from different perspectives, but it's very difficult to include new perspectives because you always have a bias towards how you see the reality and how you see the world. So how do you do that? How do you have so many perspectives and you can keep them side by side?
Yeah, I mean, I would say when I was transitioning from being an engineer at Adobe and just then figuring out how do I become full-time formal, like formally titled designer, right? Because that was very important. And this was a time when I would say the way I was looking at design was from the point of view of an engineer or a developer, right? Like, I have this tool and I know this can be done. And it was like very feature-centric and tool-centric, right? So I could make things that were cool to look at, but did that solve a purpose? And was there any meaning of that? Was not clear. And I feel like in the next 1 year after I left Adobe, there was this one transition time when I personally went through this transformation in my head, which is like, I don't need to learn anything new anymore. I want to unlearn a lot of things that I've learned as an engineer about design. So I could just roll back and like clean the slate to relearn what design actually is, like what is user experience, what is product design. And I think that helped me for the rest of the last, like, now almost 9-10 years now to be open to everything, right? There was and also I did not come from a formal design school. So I did not have that formal, like, I would say, a list of things that I had to abide by, like, this is design, right? Everything that I was learning in the following years is like, oh, this is how it should be done. Be it understanding a problem space, be it collaborating with your partners in the team, or be it like just receiving and giving feedback. It was all coming to me as the first time. I was just like learning them as fresh as possible. So that way, I think keeping yourself open is like open these doors of like just not being held up or hung up on something that you really, really want to protect, because there was nothing for me to protect. It was like, I was just like gathering, and it was just like an open field. And also that I brought that understanding into just day-to-day design work as well. And I saw that that was really working, because design is all about that, right? How do you bring these perspectives, like massage them together and like create something that is a story that is compelling enough, which creates some value for the user, but also for the business that you are, you know, developing this for. So yeah, I mean, being open from that point of my career was really helpful for me to grasp and be very malleable, very open about things that come to me.
You studied computer science and then switched to design, which is actually a very difficult transition, because as you said, you have to unlearn a lot of things. What advice would you give to computer science students who wish to learn UX on their own?
I did not like go for a formal like computer science degree, right? I mean, I was learning software development, like programming in Visual Basic and, you know, Java and JavaScript to like begin with. Those were like those days. I would say it was always this hunger for creating things. And I feel like someone who can code, and especially, in the digital world, has this ability to create that, like, you know, like sculpt this thing together, right? Like, as a designer, you do know the blueprint of what to be sculpted, but the process of sculpting is what the engineer does, right? So I feel like that was very important. And I feel like that perspective really helped me for the like rest of my career, where like I did understand the lingo of when an engineer says that, you know, this cannot be done or this should be done this way. I'm very open to those perspectives, but because I understand that point of view that they're bringing, right? So the advice that I would have is like, if you're getting into design, I think there has to be this like open mind that you need to keep, which is that phase of unlearning. Design is very different. Writing code or engineering is very different. They are two sides of solving this problem. And you have to understand that if you're coming to one side, you have to leave the other side for the most part of it. You can't like just keep them together. Using tools and, you know, executing with tools is a very different thing. Someone who and code can also do pixels for sure. But then what happens when you want to instill certain amount of values and principles in a product and like, you know, think about growth part of the product, not just like this one feature, but what does this one feature do to the person who is using it or do to the world when many people are using it, right? There's a lot of understanding that you need to kind of go through in order to create a product that is a successful product. I mean, product success is an outcome of all those things that you actually, you know, understand and go through and like, you know, analyze. So it's very important to kind of separate them out. If you are coming into design, you have to understand that that understanding of the engineering side of it will help you gain the perspective of empathy towards your engineers who are building it. But as a designer, you will always be able to, you know, do the design that you want to do, right? So that is very important.
As designers, feeling energetic and being in a state of flow is really important. And it's actually in this zone that we are able to create good products. You have to be in that zone of flow to create good solutions. How do you manage your energy and different states of mind?
I think my process is, you know, a lot of times. So last like 4 or 5 years, the kind of work that I've been involved with is a lot to do with pathfinding, right? A lot of ambiguous problem spaces that I kind of delve into, which does not have an existing product or a surface. So I get an opportunity to get into those ambiguous spaces. It has its, you know, pros and cons, but I like to do that. I love to do that. And while doing that, my process has been this like three-stage process where I think about a problem in three different lenses. Every time a problem comes to me, first is like, how do you dissect the problem? Every problem has different parts, right? Like, and you got to kind of break them, cut them out into certain digestible pieces, I would say. And these digestible pieces are like you talked about the scenes in a video, right? Like they have to completely be a snippet or a scene in your head to solve them separately. And these solutions in one flow, they become the complete solution framework or the solution structure, right? So the way I look at it is like, my first step is of an explorer, right? So kind of go and like look at a problem from an explorer's point of view, where you see these blue sky ideas that can maybe solve this problem. And also like, you know, blue sky ideas around like just what the problem is. Why does the problem exist? Who is the problem for? Is it a problem worth solving? Or is the solution not to solve the problem, but to avoid the problem, right? So there are like so many ways you can like think about it. And then once you have some solutions or a list of things that might work to solve that problem, then I get into this phase of a scaler, right? Like I think scale has taught me a lot in terms of, you know, and now it also connects to your question of like working in bigger companies. I think scale is something that you really learn when you work for a product that is kind of used by multiple million people or even like billion people, right? So that scale, adding that scale lens is very important because at scale, most of the times would break the most, you know, the coolest ideas will break down when you apply scale to it. And I would say scale is a lens through which you can actually hone a set of ideas into that one thing that would, if one thing passes the scale test, I would say, that is something that you can like take forward, right? And with me, that has happened multiple times. So the second part is the scale one. The third part is the lens is optimizer, the magnifying glass, right? Like, so the scale phase also helps me understand what are the antagonist situations, right? Like what harm would this thing do in the world or to the user if it was wrong, it was used in a wrong way. So that is something that comes from scale. The third part is where mostly like every time I have a new space that I want to show people, I want to kind of share this vision and the strategy of this one thing that I'm working with the team, I want to optimize that to the finest details, even if it's in the vision process, right? Because that's what kind of brings that. I think vision really comes there when you actually show a very high fidelity thing to a set of people and narrate a story in a very, very high you know, fidelity. It really establishes or lands that in a way that there is no scope for any other interpretation coming in because they're understanding what really you want to do in the world and, you know, how this product could actually manifest in the world and be a value generator for both the user and the business, right? So these are like three parts that I usually use to keep my flow going. Doesn't matter if it is a big problem, like, you know, how do we think about creating a complete a visual composer for so many people who would start using stories versus a small feature that will help a creator create more stories when they are in the 24 hours phase. So this is like a small problem versus a big problem, but you can go through the same flow. Doesn't matter what the problem is.
That is really, really interesting. I think this is a very cool way of looking at things. And now that you've mentioned, I feel that that first impression of your idea is really important because your stakeholders are going to judge the entire potential by that first pitch. You spoke about scalability. I just wanted to understand, there's always a trade-off that you make. If your idea is super, super cool, the scope of scalability reduces. So you have to find that soft balance point between something that is really cool, but it's also scalable. How do you find that soft balance?
Yeah, that's a good question. I kind of struggle with it a lot of times while communicating this with other folks, other designers. I feel like the coolness factor is good at a certain stage, but with time, what I realized is your vision does not have to be or need not have to be cool, jazzy, splashy, and long or whatever. The one objective that I associate with any design artifact or a document or even like complete framework is clarity, right? Like if you are able to clearly articulate what you're about to do, what you want to do, or what this can do, or the team wants to do, everything with clarity, that is the best thing that can happen in a day-to-day design role, right? I mean, that is where people should try for, according to me, simplicity and clarity. These are the two things. You can talk about, and also there's a little philosophical angle to it, which is like, how much is it worth my time and also people's time to kind of invest in this problem that we are talking about, right? So for example, it could be a problem which is like, oh, this is an existing product and people generally, we are seeing data that people are not waiting in the screen for a longer time. So the question to ask is, why do we want people to, wait on the screen for a longer time? And then apply various the data points you might have from your, data science folks that, maybe people are not finding. And then, usually in design discussions, you're like, oh, we can make the text clearer or, make the button clearer or, make them understand what should they expect in the next stage or so. So there are like multiple things to do, but just to kind of, from an understanding point of view, what really it boils down to is this screen is a part of a bigger game. It's not this one screen, right? Like we kind of start focusing into one thing that is like, oh, I want to make this cool, but does that align with the bigger philosophy of the product? Where does it plug into, right? Because we are all in the day-to-day life, we're creating these like atoms in a molecule and the molecules in the organism, right? Like, so we need to kind of understand the properties of the organism in order to design the molecules and also the atoms, right? So you don't focus on what you're doing, but you focus on for what you're doing this, why you're doing this, right? Like this whole thing. And then I think a lot of these understanding just like become clear. And then it doesn't matter whether it is cool or not. If it is clearly fitting into the larger objective, I think you're good to go. Yeah.
Whenever you're solving a problem, you'd realize that, oh, there are 5-6 things wrong with this flow. There are always a bunch of problems that would take your attention. And you have to figure out what is the problem we need to solve right now. Like, what is the most important problem to solve? How do you figure that out? How do you recognize the most important problem?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. I feel like, it's an industry jargon now, almost like, solving for the low-hanging fruits, right? And I've heard that from a bunch of people and me myself, back in the days, I was like, oh, why do people just want to solve for the, low-hanging fruits? Like, why don't they do this bigger things and all of that? I feel there's a lot of like machinery aspect to it, right? And this answer can go a little longer, which is like, when we are making things like engineers, designers, product people, we are all like experts in our own fields, which are like, trying to solve this shared problem with our own expertise, right? But on the top of that, there are these like leaders who are also like thinking about the machine, which is the culture and this like this dotted framework of all the people who are sitting there, right? For them, it's a machine. I mean, startups are a different story altogether. But when it comes to a bigger company, when a company grows, I feel leaders and people who are culture creators, they are not thinking about products and features, right? Like they're thinking about how well are we designing this machine, right? And no matter what problem we input into the machine, there is going to be a valuable output that's coming out, right? So it can be a video solution, it could be an AR solution, it could be a map solution, but the value it generates should be what their vision is. So a lot of times, like that is how that layer on the top is working, but the layer at the bottom is getting worked up because of a lot of these like issues, like, oh, everyone's solving things. Because solving smaller problems, by the way, what it does is honestly, it actually makes you more confident of tackling larger problems, right? Like you can't just go and tackle a large problem on the go and like without having a validation that a smaller problems were working already, which is kind of a part of that bigger problem. So I would say identifying smaller problems to solve is a part of that vision. Like if I want to reach here, what is my strategy? Like, you know, a lot of times people confuse between the two, like vision, product vision and product strategy. And I feel like there is a world where as designers, I've at least like seen some of the best people I've worked with and I try to practice that myself, which is how do you combine the two, right? How do you actually think like a vision and execute like a strategy, right? Like how do you talk about that as a strategy, but in the back of your mind, that strategy is completely fueled by the vision that you might have. So a lot of times the technique is not to talk about the vision the way you think about it. It's like, okay, let me go a little more philosophical, which is like, if you have a dream, right? Don't sell it like a dream, sell it like a belief, right? Like when you make other people believe in a belief, they want to work with you. They want to do this thing together. But the moment you talk about that as a dream, it becomes a little self-centric and they don't see value in it, right? So I feel like that's the difference here where like, you know, you can take that metaphor and apply that into your, you know, day-to-day work and say that, oh, there's this like bigger thing and how can I break it into smaller chunks? And which chunk is the one that will most clearly communicate the belief and then, you know, people will come together and work on it. Because at the end of the day, you know, these products, these features, these, you know, things that we are building, they're all volatile because of the nature of the industry we are in, right? Like they will just like change in the next iteration, right? It doesn't matter what you make today. So holding on to pixels is the worst thing to do, but, you know, figuring out how people dynamics work, how we can work together on these kind of things consistently and generate value is like more important. So I would say figure out those smaller things that more people want to work together and like finish and accomplish together. And then, that will build a more, I would say, confident path for all of you to, you know, take up the bigger problems and like work on that.
That was really deep. Actually, I really love that answer. I'm a huge fan of philosophy, so I really like these kinds of answers. Cool.
Awesome.
At the very end, I just wanted to know, what would be three free yet extremely powerful design resources for someone who is just entering design and wants to be really good at it? Like even that designer wants to work at places where you've worked at. So what resources should they follow?
Okay, this could be a longer answer as well. I just feel like in terms of resources, it's infinite now, right? Like picking up three is impossible. My advice would be, as designers, follow some of the marketing gurus, right? Like, you know, what they are talking about, how they execute things, how are they solving problems, how are they creating the narrative of a thing and, you know, using that, right? So there are a lot of marketing people on the internet. So as designers, like follow them. The second thing is like, try to, and again, I mean, you know, in school, I used to hate history, but after becoming an adult and being a designer, I feel like history is such a powerful thing. It's because there is a lot that is there. And I feel like history just keeps repeating itself in different contexts and different realms and different with different set of people and dreams and aspirations. But there is a core concept that remains the same, right? If you if you go back into time and like just like understand how money came into the picture, why are we the most, you know, sophisticated or superior species on the planet? There's so many things to kind of uncover. Not even going that far, like, you know, if you take the history of, or the evolution, look at the evolution of things right around you, the car that you drive, the aeroplane that you fly in, what is the evolution? Like, we all know when it was invented and, you know, when things kind of, you know, started, but people don't give as much attention to innovation as they do to invention, which is like, oh, first time this happened. But iterations actually made it so that after more than 100 years, people are still using it. And it is kind of, you know, changing the course of our humanity. Understanding, so that is like one. And the third thing is like just observing things, right? Like, how do you think about things in models and, or I would say mental models or metaphors? It's very important as designers to do that and keep doing that. It will not come from just reading one book or, you know, watching five videos. It is a kind of lifestyle, right? I mean, it's like things like, how does a perception work? Be it generating trust with people, be it communicating something to people, be it making something do something together, right? Like, what are these things that are, you know, making these things work is very, very important. And in the third part, I would like to say that metaphors have helped me so much in like establishing the narratives and stories to people who are not designers, but I had to explain abstract concept, which was, like, it was very clear in my head, but I knew that making them understand or present this in a way that I feel is right is not going to work. So then, you know, you bring metaphors and talk about it in a way which is like, oh, I know what you're saying. I worked on a bunch of stuff. Like, I had to actually take out academic papers written in like 40, 50 years ago, and you know, which talked about things in a different way in that world. For example, working on Messenger and like working on real-time presence, they're like new concepts altogether. But I got so much perspective from reading a book which was written in 1976 by three social psychologists, and the book was called The Social Psychology of Telecommunication, because the phone, like a dialer phone, was new then, and there were so many things happening psychologically in human beings, the way they communicated, right? And I got to learn about so many things that can be like translated into UI and product mechanics today, even today, that a lot of people just don't want to think about it that way, right? So going back into history and like picking these, you know, things out, converting them into today's data, today's mechanics, and talking about it as metaphors always pushes you, always, I would say, gives that edge to you in terms of being a storyteller, because then you know what is that one message I want to land, and I can assess different audiences, different setups, different problem spaces, and choose the type of story I want to tell, but I want to land this one message every time I'm talking to them, right? And that's when over a period of few months, maybe then you get a combined, you know, I would say, nod of saying that, oh, let's do it together, right? I mean, everyone is on board and everyone wants to do this one thing, and you've got a green light for a project that you started from scratch.
Incredible. That was a very spiritual and philosophical answer, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, you know, design is like that. I mean, I would say it is just common sense, right? I mean, it's the best solutions I've seen from people who I really respect, or I have tried to like make those and got feedback. And I really felt that, oh, this is where I know this solution has arrived, which is when people have said, shit, this is so simple, why didn't I do it, right? Like, you know, that is where it kind of boils down to. And I think that simplicity just boils down to common sense. Common sense is, it's the most difficult thing to achieve in something. Like, imagine a product that you design, which a user doesn't have to think how to use it, right? Like, think about that. It's very hard, you know, the way we design tooltips and like onboardings to onboard the user into a product that they are using for their own, you know, benefit and their own life, but you are designing for them. So yeah, there's a lot that you can actually learn and apply from just like being a little, I would not say spiritual, I call this metacognition. You know, like, you you know what is recognition, right? Like metacognition is like just like going one level up and seeing those things from the, you know, top level. And just like, you know, oh, you can then connect the dots and like build more robust frameworks and understand where the loopholes are, what are the risk factors and everything, like, you know, and then make something that is really, really valuable.
Awesome. I think we've learned a lot in just like 40, 45 minutes. And thank you so much. I mean, these were the questions. I have a lot of questions, but I know that this is enough for us to start learning. And I feel I would recommend each and every person viewing this episode, listening to this episode, to go check out Debashish's work. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And I am super, super happy. All the very best of luck for your future endeavors. And I hope that you succeed and make crazy stuff. And just looking forward to see more things from you.
Yeah, it was really, really awesome talking to you, Ansh. And I really enjoy these conversations because most of the time at work, you don't get to, you know, go back into your history and, you know, talk about where you came from, what was your journey and what should be the advice for designers. But honestly, like, you know, it was something that I really enjoyed on a Friday evening. So totally. Thank you. And all the best to you too. You're starting up now and there's a long career in front of you. All the best. And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right, guys. See you soon for the next episode. Bye.
You just finished listening to an episode from whiteboard.fm. Don't forget to follow our podcast because we are coming up with many more interviews that will help you accelerate your growth as an upcoming product designer. Check out our website, whiteboard.fm, to learn from our videos based on case studies and hiring processes at some of the most amazing companies in the world. This is your host, Ansh Mehra, signing out.